Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. It's Giff Briner here, another exciting program of Two Guys with Heart. Me and my very faithful friend,
Dave Colonen.
Dave and I are going to do our very best to enlighten your day, to share some valuable information for you that might alter your path and help you live a more Christian life. And we have an exciting subject for you today. And in fact, we've both been reading some material. The one that sets up alternatives for generation to generation to generation and how and why we think differently. And in fact, we've got some of our thoughts out of a book titled Three Chairs. And that's what we're going to sort of title this, use some of those guidelines that we read earlier about the various options, the way people think and what happens and what has happened to our good old world. The story would start out by a strong Christian man who attended a church conference. And when he attended this conference, he inadvertently met a young man who was the son of a great Christian speaker, a great Christian leader. And we'll not mention any names. We're just going to say that during that conference, he wanted to make sure that he had an opportunity to meet this young man. He wanted to find out what it would be like to be the son of a great Christian leader. So he did that. During the first break, he worked his way over and he met this young man. And he said, hello, and he introduced himself. He says, I'd just like to ask you, what was it like to grow up with a great Christian leader like your dad? It must have been an instrumental experience for you. And with that, the young man's mouth fell wide open. He just stared at him and glared at him. And finally, he was able to speak some words. He squeaked them out. And he said, I hate my father. I hate God. And he started cussing in a blue streak and muttering. And he said, hey, stay away from me. And he got up and walked out of the room. Can you imagine the shock on that man when he realized this great Christian leader had a son that left him down completely? Well, it bothered him immensely. He said, how could that happen? And how did it ever get to that point? And he thought, man, what if that would happen to my own family? I couldn't think of anything worse than someone walking up to my kids, asking them if they would want to talk about their father, and they would swear at them, and rejecting not only their father, but rejecting the Lord in that way. Oh, my goodness. Too many Christians sweep these kind of problems under the rug. You see, they're real problems, and they still do happen today. And just because you live a good, godly life does not mean the next generation will or the one that follows. Dave, would you kind of do us a favor and explain those three chairs we were talking about, the three generations or these three principles?
You betcha. The church doesn't seem to know what to do about all the urgent problems that are in the family today. Christians don't want anyone to know about their kids and their faith falling apart. Too many Christians sweep these problems under the rug. Some even place the piano over the rug to make sure nobody notices. They act as if putting this crisis out of the sight will make it disappear. It's not disappearing. It's multiplying at a very alarming rate. The three chairs, many, many, many years ago, I preached a message about the three chairs. The first chair has its way of living, and the second chair has its way of living, and the third chair even has another way of living. And by the time Giff and I are through with you today, or you're through with us, you'll know what kind of chair you sit in, first, second, or third. So Let me start. I'll talk about the first year, and I'll let you talk about the second. And
okay.
Maybe we'll all fit in on three. There's no doubt about it. The Bible talks about people who sit in each chair. Now, Joshua is the prime example of a person who sits in first chair. He knows the Lord, lives his life to serve him. Every time you see Joshua in the pages of the Bible, you find him seeking to please God in his faith and in his action. Joshua once said to his people, "Now therefore fear the Lord, serve him in the sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua chapter 24. Can you see why Joshua is in the first chair? He loves the Lord. He has a heart for God. He even commits his family to serving the Lord. Joshua has first-hand faith. This is a man totally devoted to God. That's what it's like in the first chair. The people of Joshua's generation were also committed to God. They had seen him work mighty wonders. They knew God had been with them during the difficult times in their land. That's the mark of people in the first chair. They know God firsthand. They love him, and they've seen him work in their lives. They can pass the good news of Jesus Christ because they have experienced his mighty power in their own lives. That's first chair people. You're going to talk, Jeff, about the second chair people.
Wow, you did a good job of explaining that first chair. That's the powerful, strong Christian chair. These are the leaders, like the very foundation of this nation we started on. I like that. You did a good job of explaining that. Now then, let's take a look at that second chair. Well, we have to step down a generation, don't we? What does Joshua and Judges say about it? The scriptures are very clear. Let's trace what happened to Joshua's descendants. And it's written in Joshua chapter 24 and Judges chapter 2, if you want to follow along. Joshua 24, verse 31 reads, "Israel served the Lord all of the days of Joshua and all of the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all of the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel." Now then, take a look at Judges chapter 2, verse 7. It reads similarly in that, "So the people served the Lord all of the days of Joshua, and all of the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all of the great works of the land which he had done for Israel." What that basically means is this is the next generation. These are the ones who followed on. Not quite as godly as the first one, perhaps, but not as bad as the third one. You see, the child who is raised in a first chair family is most fortunate. He sees with his own eyes the commitment of his parents and how God actually answered the specific prayer of his parents. It was the same in Joshua's day, no different than it is today. The second generation receives the innumerable benefits of their parents firsthand. They had known all of the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. That's what it said. You see, this generation that came after Joshua still believed in the Lord. There was one significant difference, though. Their faith wasn't original. They hadn't dealt personally with the Lord. Instead, they relied on the faith of the parents and the stories of what God had done in their parents' generation. That alone had been enough to develop faith in God. As children, they either saw the miracle of God, and then they saw the intervention of their works in their parents' behalf, or they found out about the Lord's miracles from their father and their mother. They either saw it or they heard about it. They heard how God had parted the waters of the Red Sea, and how they brought water from the rocks, and provided manna in the wilderness. All of these things were something that they heard about from their parents. You see, they believed these stories, but they were a generation removed from the actual having dealt with these primary issues. You see, their parents were the adults who marched around the walls of Jericho, while they themselves only heard about God's miracles on that battle. They believed all the facts about God, though they didn't experience him personally. Now, that's a very good definition of that second chair, that middle chair. David, what do you think about this third chair now?
It's sad, but let me read it for you.
Okay.
And when all the generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. There are three different profound differences between the second and the third generations. First, the third generation did not know the Lord. In other words, they did not know God personally, and they were not saved. The grandchildren of Joshua's day didn't even count themselves as believers. Whoa! Second and third generation did not know the work in which he, the Lord, had done for Israel. That's difficult to believe, that they didn't even know the stories of the great miracles their grandparents had experienced. They didn't know the Jericho walls tumbled to the ground because the nation of Israel marched and blew trumpets and that God parted the Jordan and that the sun stood still. They didn't even know. It's not what they reject. It's not that anybody rejected them. They didn't even know about them. And why not? There can only be one reason, is that their parents never told them. And why not? Think about it. The moment a father or mother would tell the story of God's great answers to prayers in their parents' life, the immediate question is the heart of the child would be, where are those miracles in our lives? When first-hand faith gets passed on, it always becomes at that moment the second-hand faith. And the second-hand faith doesn't have any first-hand experience. You go through the motions, but there isn't any vibrant reality behind them. First-hand faith has experienced the reality of God. Second-hand faith has only heard about it, and by the time it gets to the third faith, well, there's no faith left. The people of the third generation don't believe it because there is no reality for them to experience. Now, Giff, we're talking about three kinds of chairs that people sit in.
Yep.
And we've talked about one, two, and three. The first chair, the person is saved. The second chair, the person is saved. But the third person is not saved. And we're trying to explain to it. Each generation loses a little bit, and finally when you get down to the third generation, nobody even told them about what they're supposed to do. They've made up their own way. So we're trying to help you today decide, what chair do you sit in? First, second, or third? How about your children? What chair do they sit in? How about all your friends and your neighbors? You can begin to just have a little conversation with them, and you know immediately what chair they sit in. So I'm going to ask you to just give us some more information. We'll talk about the three chairs in the house, in the living room. We could talk about which chair has your name on it in your home. And before we're through today, we're going to be able to help you find God. And to say, hey, look, gang, we need to tell you about, and not only tell you, we need you to experience it with us instead of falling apart at the seams. If you want to start in there somewhere, Giff, and find yourself talking, we'll fit.
Well, I think you've done a very good job of setting the stage here. Let's do just a quick review of these chairs. That first chair is a person that has saved. That first chair person has the works of God under their belt, their experience, their own personal experience. Very godly person. That second chair person is also have been saved, but they have been saved because their parents told them about it. So the second chair people have heard about the miraculous works of God. But the third chair has a person in it that is not saved. The third chair person doesn't have any of this firsthand knowledge. And the second generation never bothered telling them about it. So they just don't know of the works of God. They are not saved. It's a tragedy how that happens. And if you think about it through the history of mankind, that might have been true since day one. Think of the founding fathers of this great nation we have on. There can be absolutely no doubt these were God-fearing Christian people, founded on Christian Judeo values. All of our laws and our government is established that way. The preamble of every state constitution starts out that way. We are all godly people, and our laws are based on godly principles. But what happened as time went by? The next generation come by and a little bit disappears. Then the next generation comes by and they didn't even hear about it. We only know about what was written. Isn't that the way it is even yet today? I think of our generations in those three chairs that might be in our living room right now. Three different stations of life. Think about your own grandparents. Godly people. Those that perhaps lived through the Great Depression. Nothing was thrown away. They were God-fearing people. Everything was repaired and made to work. They had no TV. They had no flying across the nation in an airplane to meet someplace. And in fact, they spent most of their life within 100 miles from where they were born. Second chair people, they had things a little differently, didn't it? Most of us fall into that category of somewhere, that we at least saw these great things, and we heard our parents talking about being raised that way, but they had an empty faith. They were only hearing about what their parents did, and they could see it and hear it, but they couldn't touch it firsthand as a follower of Jesus. And now then, what did they pass on to the next generation? Well, what's our second or our current generation's kids like? They're watching fancy shows on TVs and playing games on their CD-ROM. They have a telephone in their hip pocket that they can talk when their grandparents don't even like to look at those things, let alone use them. They do when they have to, but they don't particularly like it. Times have changed. That's the first chair, the middle chair, and the third chair. What do you think, David? Does any of that make sense?
I'm going to talk about the work ethic
Okay. That
comes in the thinking. You think different about life in all three chairs. And in the first chair, they see themselves in their vocation, in their call to life. The first chair person holds firmly to the belief that what he does for a living is a result of the Lord's call upon his life. The nature of the work isn't necessarily the issue. What is the issue that he believes the Lord has called him to do? Remember, the first chair person not only knows the Lord, he knows the works. He also serves the Lord. So he works for the Lord at his job as well. What does the second chair, what do they think about their work? And then I'll deal with the third.
Well, the second chair people view their work from a completely different perspective. To begin with, they have a tendency to divide people into two categories, religious people and normal people. You see, they have decided that the Lord probably does call religious people to go on the mission field, but he doesn't call normal people. Work for most people is simply the use of the abilities to make a living. So when the second chair person makes a decision about his vocation, it is usually based on what job pays the best or what position offers the best situation geographically or culturally. Money and the type of people or organization really doesn't play a part with the second chair person. Their comfort level is only on getting to the top, up the ladder. He is not all that concerned about the call to God. A second chair person will wake up in the morning with the question, "Well, Lord, I dedicate this life to you. What in particular would you like me to do for you?"
Oh, they don't work. They don't wake up with that.
That's right.
I mean, that's they the first chair conversation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, right.
Lord,
that's
what
the
do you
first
want me to do today?
Person.
And you're at the second chair now. I'll pick up third. Go ahead, finish.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to draw a parallel between the and I say that that first one doesn't wake up in the morning with all of that, the second chairperson, like the first chairperson does. But that's outstanding. Outside their frame of reference, they don't think the same way, the second chair people. I've traveled around and I've seen different people in different cultures, and the vast majority have never asked the question, mainly because they are not sold out to the Lord. So they don't ask the question of which chair do I belong in, or where do I stand, or which direction should I go. They remain committed to their own interests and decisions. Their ears are shut to God's calling because their hearts haven't opened up to his leading. They have so many conditions and excuses and buts, but this, but that. But their mind is defeated in that small, quiet voice of that master trying to talk to their inner soul. The fabric on the middle chair is woven with preferences of a person who sits in it, not by the Lord. Rather than viewing their own work as a calling, they view it as an avenue to a better life.
The third chair people, oh man, they don't even think about such things as callings. They're not even possible. After all, they do not know God. They are able to discern the things of the Spirit? No, that's not right. They don't. No matter how they may try, how smart they may be, or how much wisdom they may have acquired, they cannot receive the things of the Spirit. So they take jobs without any thought of calling at all. This kind of thinking marks the person who lives as if there is no God. For a believer to follow this pattern is more than immature. It's ungodly. The second chair, they deal with so much in their look at life. And then the third chair, some of you that are listening to us today, you have already picked out what chair your whole family sits in. And for those who sit in the second chair, that kind of thinking seems far-fetched. It's perhaps only a word game, but when the change comes and they are liberated to sit in the first chair, they begin to serve the Lord. We're talking about how you can move from the third chair to the second chair, and then to the first chair. From Matthew chapter 6, listen to what it says. Therefore, do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For after all these things the Gentiles seek, for those were the third chair people of Jesus' day. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Matthew chapter 6.
That's one of my favorite chapters in the whole Bible. My, oh my, that's a profound difference, isn't it? From chair number one, chair number two, to chair number three. And that's what the Lord is trying to tell people. You see, you seek to be in that first chair, and the second chair will work for you. But you have to be able to move towards the first. Don't seek what your job will enable you to buy. Seek rather his kingdom or his righteousness. Don't worry about obtaining material things. God will supply all of your needs. The things that with this world will not last. Instead, focus on the spiritual things, which are eternal. They will last forever. Do you know what happened to these things that you really need? Well, the answer is profound. All of these things shall be added to you, or shall be given to you. That is written in the verses that Dave just shared with you so clearly in Matthew chapter 6. God will provide everything. David, this is a very powerful lesson that you've worked on here today and sharing with us the three chairs. Our time is exhausted, but do you have any final closing thoughts you'd like to say about these three chairs?
There are a lot of ways to go, and I know our time is gone. There's a commitment, there's a compromise, and there's a conflict. Those are all three areas of the first and second and third chair. There's also people that are concerned in the first chair, possessions in the second chair, and purposelessness is in the third chair. You want to talk about this again the next time, too?
It might be a good idea because there's so much to this thought, yes.
We're asking ourselves.
Yes.
We can begin to talk like, hey, here's where I sit. And I'm going to help you sit there too. All right? So, this is Dave Colon. I think we're out of time.
Yes, we are. Gift Briner saying bye-bye for now. See you tomorrow.